Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Whatever is happening in the world, the water always hits the beach. The surf doesn't care if a beach is abandoned just off a downtown city street or in the middle of a civil war. Its journey is unstoppable. Surfers follow the waves, sizing them up, riding them down, oblivious to the world around them. So-called feral surfers, in fact, seek out places around the world that are remote, in conflict zones, to experience waves like no others. This thrill-seeking was made part of the Vietnam-era classic film Apocalypse Now, Robert Duvall's crazy Colonel Kilgore surfing a beach under fire in Vietnam.
Don't you think it's a little risky for R&R?
If I say it's safe to surf this beach, Captain, it's safe to surf this beach!
There are real-life surfers who have less dramatically sized up waves and war zones in their careers. Reporter and New Yorker staff writer William Finnegan is one of them. He wrote an impressive book on the nearly unreported war in Mozambique back in the 1980s. He was early to the Somalia story in the 1990s. He spent a lot of time in Mexico among the drug cartels and their victims. His book Barbarian Days is about how he came to surfing and the eye it has given him to the subtleties and tragedies in the world, and the pure joy of finding a wave and a moment. William Finnegan is a drifter with a purpose.
It's reading the ocean. It's sizing up a place. And most surfers have a home break, which they know and understand at a sort of post-doc level of detail that it's almost incommunicable. And I have a few of those places, too. But if you travel around, you've got to do this more quickly. Figure out a place. You know, read the ocean in that place, and that's every current and eddy and changes with the tide and the swell direction and the wind direction. And it's not unlike showing up someplace that you plan to write about, like the kind of reporting I do, long form. And it's similar in that you have to sort of get your bearings as quickly as you can and then dig as deep as you can and begin to be able to predict, well, in the case of surfing, what the ocean is likely to do next. That's kind of what it's all about out there, and to react creatively to that. Maybe it's pretentious to call it the intellectual work of surfing, but that's what everybody's doing out there, is trying to figure out what the ocean's doing. And when reporting, you're trying to figure out what's going on in a place.
Predicting the unpredictable.
Yeah, and then sort of being at the right place at the right time and doing the right thing, that is talking to the right person or understanding and seeing what's going on and getting it into your notebooks.
When reporters are in the field, and I think when we think about the things that are going on in the world that are so awful and produce headlines, it seems what you've done in this book and in your other writing is to show, maybe not explicitly, but how, you know, it could be the ugliest place in the world, but just step away and it can be completely beautiful. And that the beauty and the ugliness of the world are in such close proximity. And that's something you don't get from many reporters.
That's really well put, too, though. It's true that all around, at least in my experience, the sort of headline-producing conflicts, Somalia was a good example, terrible, it was a terrible famine, a terrible civil war. And there was kind of this chaos of warlords versus the UN. And I was reporting there went after the UN left. And then there was what? No government, and trying to understand this, you know, incredible suffering and destruction. And yet also these wonderful people, these sort of incredible looking people still in some ways living very gracefully, and quite a challenge to understand how that place worked. And a lot of it was about the grace and sort of long-suffering ingenuity of the people there. And all the headlines were, you know, anarchy, anarchy. And it wasn't anarchy at all. It was just a lot of structures, Somali, Islamic, other sort of postmodern stuff that you had to spend some time to begin to understand.
The thing that scared me and made me most hopeful about Somalia when I was there, and it was also when everyone had left, I found myself there, and, you know, there was a village that was doing just fine right next to a village where everyone was dying. You would ask questions, you know, why don't you go help the other village? And, you know, they would look at you like and end up like them. What are you, crazy? It wasn't as though the humanitarian qualities were lost. It was just something about war had taken them back to square one, and they were rebuilding.
Yeah.
It wasn't like some, you know, aid agency was going to come in and hand them a check and they were going to go back to their former ways. The war had really taken them back in time.
Yeah, yeah. Back to clans and sub-clans and sub-sub-clans and lots of structures that I never understood. I mean, I would also look at a village and say, how is this working, you know? And they say, ah, well, this sheikh has always had, you know, this encampment over here, this farm over here or something. And that before, and I try to follow out these histories that made a place, you know, part of a larger economy and a sort of functioning community.
But the idea that the rule book is gone, this sort of hollowing out, is something you've seen all over the world.
It's true, and I'm sort of, I don't know what, perversely attracted to those situations where people are having to make it up. People are having to go back to something that culturally or historically they've sort of got to rely on, but also go forward and make up new rules that are not obvious to the outsider. You know, how is it that people are surviving, or what is it that these people are doing? Those are the stories that attract me.
Well, I'm such a fan of your work and the broadness of your work, and this last book on surfing, I think, sort of underscores the broadness of it. Do you feel any sense of your unique perspective on the world? I think of you as kind of a canary in all the coal mines at once, and if something's going really bad, Finnegan's going to know about it.
I don't know. We talked a little bit about the kind of stories I'm attracted to, and a lot of them have been a bit apocalyptic, you know, wars that are particularly wasting. And I've written a fair amount about organized crime in Mexico in recent years. I've surfed a lot in Mexico, spent a lot of time there, and I'm very interested in what's going on. And they're all political stories to me. I mean, that's what I feel like I write about broadly, very broadly defined as politics. And the more I've sort of delved into what organized crime is in Mexico, you know, not just narco trafficking, but that's the sort of leading edge of it as far as U.S. is concerned. And the more I've understood about its impact on Mexican society, sort of the more horrified I've been. And I don't know about being a canary, but I do feel like by trying to dramatize what state capture means in a given part of Mexico, you know, where the cartel is really running things, the government's not, I do hope I'm sounding a certain alarm, you know, showing this is what we're talking about. We're not talking about some drug dealing. We're talking about an essential power transfer and a profound insecurity among people. I mean, it's just a real lack of civil society when organized crime is as powerful as it is now in Mexico.
William Finnegan is the author of Barbarian Days, A Surfing Life. He's a staff writer at The New Yorker. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you, John.